News Radio 680, WPTF and WPTF.com. Joe Wade, Phil McCullough, and you, 860, WPTF, 860-9783. This was going to be a two-part program. We are now at part two, and Larry is sticking with us. Our guest, first of all, is Grace Owen. She has a passion for success, 25 years of experience, including global consultancy, Bain & Company, brand leaders at General Mills, Clorox. She's an executive for technology ventures, delivers strong exits for investors. This woman graduated from MIT and Harvard Business School. In recent years, she's taught MBA programs at UNC, as well as MIT's joint venture. I mean, Grace is CEO of Savvy Marketing Group. Grace, you've got enough degrees here to, you know, we can, you know, plaster the house with these degrees.
I'll wait till you get to Michael.
All right, well, we'll get to Michael Chen right here. Michael, to my right. Michael is president and CEO of New Mind Education, a company that helps international students coming to attend U.S. universities learn about our culture, language, and academic environment. He is also president of the North Carolina Chinese Business Association. He is. He was chief operating officer of LULU.com.
It's Lulu.com.
Lulu. I didn't know if I wanted to say Lulu or not, Michael. It just didn't look right to me. Vice president of global marketing development at Red Hat, huge company. We all know about Red Hat. General manager, Red Hat China. He has a bachelor's degree from a university, pronounced university in China there. I want to make sure I get
Nanjing University.
And a master's in computer networking from NC State, MBA from Chapel Hill. So, when basketball season come around, he fights with himself.
Shut down the TV.
All right. Larry, we want to go in a couple of directions here. First of all, it's a pleasure to have both of you on. There isn't a program that I don't talk about on news radio nowadays where China doesn't come up about something. And obviously, that's going to be part of our conversation. But the other part of the conversation is the Tiger Mom book that came out that's very popular, and how they're training their youth. Now, Grace, a little bit about the book. You've read it. You are a mom of a 14-year-old.
Oh,
and are you a tiger mom? And what is a tiger mom? Let's start with that premise. And, Michael, we'll get to you, too, because you're very much involved with young people that come into this country. And I want to learn more about that. Grace, we're going to start with you. What is, in so many words, a tiger mom?
Well, if you read Amy's back cover, the parents do not allow their kids to attend sleepovers, have play dates, be in a school play, et cetera, and never accept a grade less than A. And you must play an instrument, you must play piano or violin.
And is that,
you practice
is
that,
a way,
that 6 hours a day.
Is that a way to raise a kid? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, your son, is that the way you're raising your son?
My son has gotten grades below an A. He plays bass guitar and electric guitar. When I read the book, I told him that I was going to start putting him into a piano program. And he said, Mom, it's too late. I'm almost 14.
All right, now you have one child. Let's go to Michael Chen. Michael, are you married with children?
Yes, I have two daughters. When you asked the question, is there a way to not doing that? My question is, yeah, is there another way?
So your children are raised, are your children raised that way?
I think, you know, pretty much so. My daughter plays piano. My daughter brought home a grade the other day, and my wife, you know, before she showed me the grade, she said, you know, don't speak anything, right? Let me tell you. So she showed me this. I saw it's all 99s. Immediately my minds go, no, where's the other 1 point? No, what's going on? And she said, that's why
I asked pressure from you, though? Is this pressure from you and your wife?
No, it's not. It's just normal life. Life is supposed to be this way, right?
No.
Michael.
I'm sorry.
Like in the book, Amy talks about how as each generation has more time in America, it's harder and harder. So Michael was born in China. His wife is Chinese from China. My former husband is American, Italian-American.
What's wrong with that? You saying something? There's
actually,
something wrong with us?
He's more of a tiger dad than I'm a tiger mom, actually.
Okay.
So I give him credit.
Well, there's you know, a tiger dad was my dad. It was a World War II veteran, you know, disciplinarian, tough guy. You don't want to mess with dad. You know, we didn't mess around because the old man would give it to us, you know. We didn't get in too much trouble because my father would have, you know, not gone for that. But we played baseball. We didn't get all A's, you know, and we hung out, and, you know, so... I mean, I'm having, maybe I should have been a better better dad. I think I criticized myself that I didn't do better with my son. I let him get away with too much, and I probably did. And I'm paying for it a little bit now, too.
Hey, Joe Wade, let me just say some more about Amy Choi, who's the so-called Tiger Mom. Her book was Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mom. And as Grace said, she does demand a lot of her kids. And one of her kids, by the way, has been very rebellious, so she's had to sort of back off a little bit and try to Americanize to a certain degree. But, you know, if you came home with less than an A, you were in trouble. You didn't get to watch TV. You didn't get to play video games. You didn't have these play dates and all of these things. Now, I should also say that my involvement with these folks is that I've been VP of Government Affairs for the NC Chinese Business Association for a couple of years. And so I understand, and I work with a lot of Chinese folks. There is a huge difference in how they view education. You need to understand that. I would say that most American-born parents of Chinese heritage here are not raising their kids all the way on that end of the spectrum. So we aren't here necessarily to defend that. But we'd better understand that, Joe, because what we're doing in this country in taking our kids, today is Saturday. Most of these women we're talking about now are taking their kids to tutoring classes. They're not listening to this program. Most of the moms of American kids, if you will, typical, normal Caucasian American kids, are out at soccer games. So there's a difference in
attitude. Or playing video games. And I understand that. This is not to criticize the way that they, you know, decide to do things. It's just, it's very unusual for us not growing up. See, Michael Chen, you grew up in China.
Yes, I did.
And what part of China did you grow up in?
Southwest. So if you look at North Carolina, it's more like Beijing. My hometown would be something like Phoenix, Arizona.
Okay, now a little bit about your family background, your parents. What did they do?
Both factory workers. My father made roughly about $5 a month. My mother made slightly less for almost like 30 years. My father went to work, and when he was 13, he never got a kind of a formal education, worked his all the, his way, and eventually got an MBA, by the way, before I did.
Now, we have to understand now, what your parents made, what was, were you considered a middle-class Chinese family, or?
Very ordinary. I think it's, probably
80%
of what?
Car. Didn't have a car. Okay.
Okay. We had a bicycle, and
okay.
That was a luxury.
All right. And you grew up in China. Grace, your background.
So my parents are from China, and they escaped communist China to come to graduate school in the States. So I was born in Atlanta, Georgia. My father was a professor at Georgia Tech, and my mother was a music teacher.
Well, you're a very educated family, and you're basically, you're an American. You're the first generation.
So I'm an ABC.
Yeah, I mean.
And I was a banana up until I went to MIT. So if you know what a banana is.
No.
It's like an Oreo. So it's yellow on the outside.
Yeah, because you have absolutely no accent whatsoever. I mean, you're from Atlanta.
I used to have a southern accent before I went away for school.
And I guess the question is, and join the conversation, 860-WPTF, 860-9783, or toll-free, 800-662-7979. The discussion now is that Michael Chen's children are going to be tough to compete with in the future. Grace's son, if she gets her way, and gets off the electric guitar and the rock stuff and gets to a piano concerto, is going to be tough to deal with. How are we going to deal? You don't see, Michael, you didn't grow up, you don't see it any other way. I mean, that's okay. I mean, we're not knocking that. I mean, that's just the way it is at the Chen household.
It's like the default, right? You know, what else can you do? I mean, as parents look at the life they have, look at how you know, well, be you could be, right, with the education. That's the only way. And my father never told me anything that I did was enough.
Well, you people are highly educated. I mean, you're not just educated, the both of you. You're highly educated.
Michael has 4 degrees, which is...
Well, Michael's a genius.
If you look at the people from China who are in the U.S., typically the ones that I know around here, they have 4 degrees.
Well, they're so focused. We just didn't grow up that way, Larry.
Yeah, most of the people I know in this Chinese community are multi-degreed, have PhDs. They're starting businesses. Let me tell you something else. You want to go to school and learn math and science? Your teacher is going to be mostly Chinese
or
Indian.
Well, we know that. We've been losing the spelling bees, and we've been losing everything out to to different parts of the world. So China mostly, and India is another place.
So let me ask you this, Joe. You said, is this abusive? What is more?
Why did I say it was abusive?
Well, what is more abusive? Is it more abusive to demand discipline and high expectations for your kids when they're growing up and going to school, and to require that they practice their math and science and get tutored?
I'm not sure if that's the way America is, though.
Or, let me ask you, or is it more abusive to say, you know what, whatever, let's get balance of life, let's have you go out and let's play soccer, let's listen to
life
all the radio you want, let's just be on the iPod all day long. You want to be on the computer, that's fine. You want to watch TV 6 hours a day, that's okay. But you know what, you're not going to be prepared when you're older.
Ben from Raleigh, jump in. You're on News Radio 680 WPTF.
You guys are absolutely fantastic, and I'm really proud of both of you. And this is the discussion we need to be having Monday through Friday instead of the garbage.
Oh, wait, Ben, now I can't handle that. I only do my show. Join the conversation, will you, Ben?
Okay, what I'm saying is, let me ask you, who grew up in China, did you have diversity in your classroom? And
oh, I know where Ben's going. I know where Ben's going. Go ahead. They were all Chinese in China, Ben. Go ahead, Michael.
Well, that's right.
Are you talking about the class in China?
Yeah, your school. I mean, what was it like? How often? Wait a minute. Michael, how many days did you go to school? How many hours did you go?
There we go. That's the right question. And when I grew up, we have a six-day week. And when I went to this school, I went high school, middle school. We went 6 days in school from about 7:30 till 6:30 p.m. You go back, eat some dinner, and come back, have a night study session.
Oh,
that starts from 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock every day. So that's 6 days a week. On Sunday, you get the night off to wash your clothes, whatever. That's a boarding school, by the way. And then that's essentially the life we have. But yes, we don't have diversity. We have, we have people from different parts of the county, if that's part of the diversity.
Well, there is a different segment of different Chinese, like, eat different things. Hey, I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
There's not really much diversity. I know where Ben's coming from on this thing. Ben, I mean, we got to compete again. Now, Michael is an American citizen. His daughters are going to be in the workforce. They're going to kick my son's butt. They already are.
Yes, but he's going to be socially adept.
Oh, my son or his kids?
Yeah, I mean,
my son. Yeah, I think he already is.
He'll have a good time and have lots of friends being poor. But let's face it, the United States.
But that's part of that problem is my fault. Part of it. So I mean, I'm feeling really bad here, Grace. Can I cry on your shoulder a little bit later? Let's take a break. Everybody, hold on. You too, Ben. News Radio 680 WPTF 860-9783 toll free 800-662-7979. Michael Chen is with us, and Grace Owen, and Ben, wrap it up now. What else you want to say here? I mean, these people are kicking our tails, dude.
Well, I'm an engineer, just retired, and I spent the last 3 years trying to hire young people. Nobody in this country wants to learn math and English. I've done very well in engineering, and my parents were strict. Thanks, and I got to thank them, and we ought to follow this model instead of talking about all the garbage that we talk about. The important thing is education, and I'd like to hear more of this,
Well, we're going to be around here, Ben, and we'll get phase two of this. Appreciate it, Ben. Thanks for calling. Love having your 2 cents on the show. Let's go to Ellen in Chapel Hill. You're on News Radio 680 WPTF with Michael Chen and Grace Owen, Larry, and myself. Go ahead, Ellen.
Hi. I have to agree with all these Chinese people. They are right. This country is so soft. It's unbelievable. I have a son, and I have to tell you that he has learned Chinese because he has to speak it because he travels to those countries for his job, and they're teaching their children Chinese, and we are not Chinese. But I think it's extremely important. We are too soft. We send kids to college to get degrees that are meaningless. They can't get a job. They graduate from college, and all they can do is sell cosmetics at Belk's. That is absolutely
Boy, horrible. Ellen's really nailing. She's slapping us around pretty good here, Michael. She's slapping me good.
Yes,
I would kind of disagree on a college education, though, right?
My daughter's got a lot of friends with psychology degrees that they're over at McDonald's. I don't know. Is that what you're talking about, Ellen?
When we sent our son to college, we were... My family are blue-collar people. My husband and I grew up that way. We did not have money to waste. I would not have sent my son to a private school and spent all that money for him to get a job that paid less than what I paid in tuition. That is wrong. And when they go to school, they go to learn. They're not there for their college experience. experience, although that's nice, but that's an extra. That if you're there to get an education so you can have a job when you graduate.
I do agree, if I could say something to that.
Absolutely.
I think, you know, if just share a little bit background about my undergrad, you know, education back in China. So that was from 1990 to 1994.
Yes.
My annual tuition was $25. Okay.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm.
And every month I got a $2.50 stipend from the government. So I end up making money from the college. And all the dorms is free. No electricity, no utility, nothing you have to pay. Right? This is, again, this is an older system under the planning economy where all the numbers of the college student is planned. So the government spend the money, send the kids to the college.
But you grew up in, it's communist China, right?
It's a communist China.
Right. Yeah. Okay. But you came here.
We came here because we thought that the even higher education, graduate schools, MBAs, all these are the best of the best in the world.
Well, I think we are, aren't we? We're still, you went to state in Carolina.
I believe so, and Carolina definitely has the best.
Yeah, I just saw a listing of the top 10 public universities for best value, and both NC State and Carolina were in the top 10. Grace, you wanted to say something. Ellen wants to talk to you. Ellen, Grace wants to talk to you. Two ladies here.
Yes, I was just saying, Ellen, my son, who's half Chinese, we chose to send him to a private school for middle school and high school because, the number one reason, because it does offer Chinese. And so I do think that's very important for his being globally competitive. But also, since he's half Chinese, it's important to me that he keeps that cultural heritage.
That's important. Because, you know, my son went to graduate school. He has a PhD in physics. So I have to tell you that most of his colleagues are not American.
Yep. All right, so you got a smart kid. You got a bumper sticker on your car, Ellen? I'm just kidding.
We have another problem here that goes right to the foundation of our educational system. Here in the United States, a lot of states now have end-of-year tests to graduate from high school. You have to pass that or you can't get out, right?
Yeah, right.
Well, they did that in Arizona. And they found out that when they first did it, none of the kids could pass the test. So what did they do? They dumbed down the test so that every kid could pass
the test. We do that all the time, yeah.
Therefore, we're advancing kids out in... Now, those were high school graduates now going into college. They couldn't pass the exit exam.
We do that. We did that in my business. Years ago, before I could talk on a microphone, I had to take an FCC test. It was two parts. You passed the first. You had to pass the first to take the second. Nobody could pass it. They just got rid of it. Don't have to do it anymore. So I went through that. Ellen, appreciate your phone call. Good to hear from you. And you ought to be proud of your son. He's got a PhD in physics, Ellen.
But never mind.
All right, he's bugging you. What's he doing, Ellen? I want dirt. No, I'm just kidding, Ellen.
No, expectations of parents.
Yes.
I know, and I'm going through that myself. I know, I understand. All right, appreciate it. Boy, I tell you, thank you, Ellen. Let's get to, all right, Ralph, go ahead. Ralph calls all the time. Go ahead, Ralph. Keep it short. Go ahead.
Well, one thing's important to me to find some solutions. And to me, when we see countries that are desperate and destitute have people that come to the level that your guests are, that's probably a low percentage of people going to that level. But what happens is somewhere the drive and initiative was created by families and what have you. And what we have lost, I think we've lost that in this country from the government and elected leaders and people and individuals haven't instilled that desire into our generation in the past, several. But how do we achieve that into the future so we can find some solutions for the many problems that we have? In 1958, we had someone from General Motors come and say that our country was going to be so great that technology and what have you, people would retire at 40 and 45. So that technology and the success we've had in the educational system and what have you hasn't done that. But we need to have I call it a life. I don't believe in liberal education, but I do believe we need to have a little benevolence with our lives and with the people we have in government to find some solutions for everyone except for them, not just for themselves. So how do we achieve that in this country where we don't lose 50-70% of our people to poverty and prison and what have you? How do we achieve that?
All right, Rob, appreciate your phone call. What I'm looking for here, Grace and Michael, is I'm looking for the balance between Michael and the way I grew up, or way, I mean, there's a balance there. And Grace, you're probably living the balance better. And not that, see, Michael, I mean, that's just the way it is at your house. I mean, this isn't some, there's not a, when you walk into your house, there's not these 10 things on the wall that you got to do, right? It just happens.
Your blood in your DNA, yeah.
Right. Yeah, it just happens.
Yep.
So his kids are like what I was growing up. So,
but you grew up in the States. You grew up in Atlanta,
kids,
Georgia.
Right, but my sister, she went to Juilliard, and she taught Juilliard pre-college, which Amy wasn't even able to get her daughter into. So when I was reading her book, I always thought my sister was pretty amazing piano player, and she competed and placed internationally. But when I realized, wow, she taught Juilliard pre-college, and I just thought through my parents. They weren't tiger parents. They were very, very loving and kind, but I would never... I would not want to take home anything less than an A. And I
just didn't grow up, you know, and let me tell you something. I think it's great, and I think maybe we are a bunch of soft parents. I mean, I don't think my kids respect me and like I respected my dad, because I didn't demand the respect. I didn't deserve it, and I'm not getting it. And, I feel bad about that. But I always felt that I needed to do something. My father always said, be somebody, do something. You don't have to get the college degree, but find something to succeed at it and never give up. I don't see the kids today, even when they reach a certain age, when they get away from their parents, I don't see the fight in them. I don't think they care.
Well, so the Western parenting, in the way that we're raising our son, it's you decide what you're most passionate about. And actually, when I teach, I tell people to follow their passion and the rest will follow. When I grew up, my dad brought home Engineering Today magazine consistently for 10 years, and there was no other option but being an engineer. And I lived out his dream by going to MIT. I didn't.
But was it your dream?
Well, sophomore year, I called my parents and told them that I was not going to study engineering. And there was a pregnant pause afterwards, and my dad said, "We still love you." So I chose to do and study what I did enjoy doing.
What, Michael, your children, are they in private school or public school?
Public school.
Okay, so they're surrounded by a lot of friends that aren't, you know, Chinese or whatever. They have friends of all kinds, right?
Yes, they do.
But they probably tend to hang around with kids that are similar to them in ways of education?
Not really, though. That's probably just my daughter, and she's... pretty well blended into the whole community.
Well, let's hold that thought, yeah, because I want to see if there's any influence going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll be... Join the conversation. We're really talking about... This is a tough topic, because we're talking about how we're raising our kids and how they're raising the kids. The question is this. This is probably the youngest caller that I've had on the radio. His name is Joshua. And he is 9 years old and has a question for Grace. Hi there, Joshua. How are you?
Good.
Okay, you have a question for Grace. She's listening.
Do you know anyone who is a tiger mom or dad? And what are the results in their family?
What's that?
Do you know anyone who is a tiger mom or dad? And what are the results in their family?
Okay, Joshua has a very good question. Is your mom and dad tough on you? You're only 9 years old. You're pretty sharp here, Joshua. Is your parents tough on you?
They're a little tough on me.
All right. All right, let's see what Grace has to say here.
Well, my son says that I'm 0% tiger mom, so my goal now is to become 20 to 40% tiger mom. My sister is 26.5% tiger mom, so I'm told. So we've had quite a debate amongst my Chinese friends about what percent of tiger mom we all are.
Joshua, how do you even know what a tiger mom is? I'm quite curious. How much do you...
An article in the Wall Street Journal, a couple of...
9 years old, reading the Wall Street Journal? Unbelievable. And what did that article say, Joshua?
It told about how Amy, she forced her child to try to learn a violin piece.
Mm-hmm.
And she was threatening her.
So, Joshua, do you play an instrument?
Yes, I play the piano.
And do you play violin, too?
No, my mother does.
Now, Joshua, this is 9 years old reading the Wall Street Journal now. I mean, this is we're making radio history, folks, right here on News Radio 680 WPTF. Michael, do you have a question for Joshua?
No, do you practice well? How much time do you practice every day, Joshua?
I try to practice 45 minutes a day.
Okay, so how much that your mom or your dad wants you to practice?
They want me to practice, like, probably about 45 minutes to an hour a day.
Okay.
Joshua, is your parents anywhere around you?
Are my parents? Oh, they're right here.
Can I speak to your mother or father for a second? Did they ask him? Hello, yes. Hi, how are you? What is your first name, please?
I'm Vivian.
Vivian, you got a 9-year-old reading the Wall Street Journal? What are you doing right over there? Talk to me.
Well, actually, we were just discussing the article, and so I showed it to him because, I mean, he doesn't usually read the newspaper, but he did read that article, and we also read the follow-up article the following weekend written by the Jewish mom in California, who was also another author. So I found that they were quite interesting. I mean, it generated a lot of discussion among my other, friends just about parenting in general.
How were you raised? Because, you know, I'm not saying that Michael Chen is wrong or right. I mean, he's got brilliant kids. He's a brilliant guy. Grace is fighting the battle because she's grew up in Atlanta, but her parents, I mean, she's well-educated, MIT lady over here. What are we raising our, not you so much, but the rest of us, are our kids pretty slack in your mind? As parents, are we not doing a good job?
I think it really depends on the families, but I'm a music teacher myself, so I know that kids nowadays, there are so many things competing for their time, you know, with all the sports and the different options they have for after-school activities. It all really comes down to, I think kids are so busy these days, and so it's a lot harder to focus on a few things, you know, to become really good at something.
Yeah, maybe they're busy, but are we busy with good stuff? Grace, go ahead.
And Joshua, are you learning Chinese,
This is
too?
My Vivian. This is his mom.
I am.
You are learning Chinese. And are you Chinese?
Yes, I am.
Vivian, are you Chinese?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So you're kind of relating to these two guests here now.
Oh, yes, in a big way.
You relate,
see. In my mind, going back to Joshua's question, 45 minutes is not enough.
Oh, brother, this guy.
Well,
man.
How much time is he putting
man,
in
I'm
his studies?
Telling
how much
you.
Time on your homework?
My daughter's Russian teacher is telling her, said, you know, in Russia, every kid's practice 3 hours a day.
I got to tell you, man.
Joshua, do you think you can practice more? Can you practice 3 hours a day like
they're
Amy's
on
girl?
This kid.
Usually don't have time with school and my activities.
Oh, what activities does your mother allow?
Well, I take Chinese lessons, creative writing tutors, karate lessons, piano lessons.
What belt are you?
You play Mario Kart, darn it, Joshua.
Are you a black belt yet, Joshua?
I'm a brown belt. That's one belt under a black belt.
Oh, my.
Come on, you play baseball, Joshua? Can you throw a curveball?
What's a curveball?
So my son is at a baseball
right,
tournament.
I'm done.
Today.
I'm out of here. You guys do the show. I'll be back next week. I'm telling you, it's crazy. Go ahead.
Hey, listen, I think you've heard about the teacher up in Pennsylvania who basically lost her job. Natalie Monroe lost her job because she actually went on Facebook and said, and I quote, "These kids are rude, disengaged, lazy whiners. They curse. They discuss drugs in class. They talk back. They argue for their grades. They complain about everything." And so I think there you see an attitude difference. I guess my question to both Grace and Michael is, did you encounter that kind of stuff when you were going to school, or do you tolerate that in your kids?
Let me say, Joshua, thank you very much, and tell your mom thanks for jumping on.
Thank you, Joshua.
It was a very interesting call, and good luck to you in the future. You're going to be a smart kid. You already are. 45 minutes is enough from Chang over here on this side. This is, yeah.
3 hours.
Let's go out and hit some balls, man. All right, go ahead.
Well, we just finished that discussion with my daughter this morning. Going back to Larry's question, we had the same issues. I think to some extent, somehow it's not fair to compare, you know, what we are doing and to the general kind of populations here. And most of the people you see, the Chinese or the AMI of the world, are probably 1 or 2% of the Chinese that you see, right? When I grew up, I had bad kids in my class. You know, I got thrown into the jail once because I hang out with those bad kids, right? You know, things happen.
Really?
But you know, at the end of the day, it's the expectation from the parents. It's how do you want to be? I think I heard.
Boy, I'm seeing some normalcy now for Michael Chen with 87 degrees.
Well, one thing I had the realization of, my son and I, when I've taken him back to China a couple times. So the Chinese people who are here in America, Michael, maybe you can answer this. Do they represent all the 1.4 billion people? Because to get to America, it's not easy to get here. So I think the people that you see here in the graduate programs at MIT and all these other technical schools, except, and all the ones that we've discussed, those are probably a certain type out of people who are able to apply.
It's not easy to get here. Is that what you're saying, Grace?
No,
do you have to have money to get here, Michael?
Well, nowadays, yes. Right.
Okay.
In my days, you know, nobody has money. That's the problem, right? I think if you look at the population coming from China to the U.S. as a student population, last year hit the record high, 120,000 of them. An undergraduate student was about 40,000 of them.
Do we have a limit on how many foreign exchange students we have in this country? I don't know.
I think that's roughly the highest it could go.
Okay.
I'm not sure. But you know, years ago, we're talking about, you know, 40,000 Chinese every year coming to the U.S.
Unbelievable.
Right.
Let's get another call. Let's get Linda on from Greensboro. Y'all. Welcome to the conversation. You're on News Radio 680 WPTF. Go ahead, Linda.
Good afternoon. My daughter, whenever she was reading that article, and she said, yes, you're about a 90% tiger mom.
You are. You raise your kids that way.
According to her, because she told me, she said, we were talking about, because I was saying I was how proud I was that she's graduating this year of college. She said, Mom, it was never a question. She said, you know, it was always, you're going to college, you're doing this, you're doing, you know, XX. She said there was never any question.
That's interesting because my wife is the one that said, and I'm totally for it, you must and will get an education. My daughter, state grad, magna cum laude, we're proud of her too. She's teaching, so we're good there. Joseph, we're working on a little bit to get himself back into the game. But my dad never said that to me and my brothers and sisters. He just said, learn something, be passionate about something, don't never give up. And he gave me a line, never go into the factories, because we grew up in Detroit. He did not work in the factories. He said, you go in there, you'll be a dummy for the rest of your life. That's what he said. But, I mean, we never did it. But education is important. But, Linda, where do we draw the line? Do we need plumbers and carpenters?
Okay, we do need all of those, but the thing of it is, each parent is responsible for their child.
Correct.
And with our daughter, she wasn't even allowed to watch the Andy Griffith Show. She was not allowed to.
You're brutal, Linda. You are one brutal woman.
We did not have cable until she went to college.
Oh, you're killing me now, Linda. I mean, you know what? You hit the nail on the head. You just said it's up to the parents to raise their kids the way they need to raise them.
Linda was talking about discipline and expectations.
Yeah, I don't think it's wrong the way some people raise their kids, but if you want an expectation, you want an outcome, then you're going to have to do certain things to achieve that outcome.
Well, I think to build on what Linda just said, I think it's not only just the parents' responsibility, it's also parents' responsibility to show both sides of how you raise a kid, right? It's a one side, it's tough, it's discipline. You have to do really, really well to compete in a global world. On the other side, you want to show love. You want people to do what they love to do. You want them to go through this and enjoy their lives. I mean, sometimes that's a very tough balance, too.
Well, there again, when she was younger, she wanted to take karate. I wanted her to take piano. So she had to take piano in order to get to take karate. She would get up and practice her piano. They required 5 hours a week. She would get up the morning of her piano lesson and totally memorize her whole everything the teacher wanted her to know. Go in was the best student, could play better than anyone else in her class.
Yeah, but Linda, no cable. You're a brutal woman. All right, News Radio 680 WPTF and WPTF.com. We'll be back with our guests, Larry, Grace, and Michael. And I want to change the topic a little bit to stick. I want to get to our relationship with China. You're both dealing with business with China and America. What's going on with the trade? How much money and all that kind of stuff? You're both involved in that. And as I said, I've done this show for a long time in talk radio. In the last few years, China comes up in every conversation. We'll be back with our guest, News Radio 680, WPTF and WPTF.com. Grace Owen, Michael Chen, Larry Lytle, Mytel. We're talking about, we're going from the Tiger Mom now to our business relationship with China. They're both involved with this. Now, Grace, you consult companies that want to do business with China?
Yeah, we just launched our China practice, and if listeners, WPTF listeners, are interested, they'd like a white paper we're just about to complete on doing business in China. I'd be happy to send you one if you just write China at savvymarketinggroup.com, S-A-V-V-Y, marketinggroup.com. I'd be happy to send you one. And on our website, we have, on the upper right-hand side, on savvymarketinggroup.com, we have our China site. And actually, Michael is speaking along with another CEO about their thoughts on doing business in China successfully.
What is successful? I mean, because what we want here, though, because we're all Americans now at the table, right? Let's not forget that first.
Yep.
We want as much going out, but we got to... we want some stuff coming in. I mean, we got a bad trade balance here. We got high unemployment. Michael, what can we do to make both ends happy on this deal? Because that's part of your job and Grace's job.
Well, I think if you look at a lot of the discussion these days in the politician and in the government, it's about, you know, boosting the export, right? Driving the innovation. And don't forget, at the end of the day, United States is still the biggest economy in the world. Right, and just some data, some people now got so panicked about China becoming the second biggest economy. If you look at the size of the Chinese economy, it's way, way behind. That's a far distance to number two. And if you start to look at the GDP per capita, I think the U.S. is somewhere around $40,000-$45,000 per year, whereas guess what number for China is? It's about $4,500. Right.
Well, so China's so big. It's so huge, though. I mean, it's just
so there, and there are also great things that I think as America, as a country, can start to generate the value, the income for this country, for North Carolina especially, right? And I'm part of the organization called North Carolina Chinese Business Association. A major vision and a mission for us is bridging opportunities. Now you start to see Chinese companies are becoming stronger, making more money. And where's the first location they want to be a global company? United States. How can we bring these people over, start to really generate revenue, generate jobs, and really kind of become a integrated part of this economy? I think that's the challenge that a lot of business people will have to sort out.
I mean, what are we sending? Okay, Grace, go ahead.
Well, it's very interesting. I just want to build on what Michael just said. I have a client that's a venture-backed technology company, very successful, just raised Series B. In their global expansion in the coming year, their first market they want to go to is in China. So it's interesting how companies here that are U.S.-based, they're viewing what they want their presence in China to be.
Michael, Grace, what are we sending to China that they're using? I mean, I had Steve Jobs in here from Apple, okay? Wealthy guy, right? He has the iPad put together in China. Because he can do it for $145 as opposed to probably several thousand dollars here in the U.S. Obviously, he does it to save money. Not all the parts are. He's having it assembled there. Not all the parts are Chinese. But my question is, what can we send you? How come we can't make the iPads here and send them to China? Not asking Steve Jobs that. I think as most of us Americans, and we're not as smart as you guys with all your degrees, but we don't understand why we're losing so many jobs and nobody's working here. And yet all we hear about is, well, it's cheaper to put it together in China or someplace else. How do you answer? What do you say to it?
Well, if you look at the, you know, let's build on the iPad story, right? $600, guess how much Chinese are making? 5% of that value is made by Chinese. Who else is making the rest of it? It's Japanese, it's a Korean, it's Americans, right? Mm-hmm. So the iPad is actually a great story to answer your question, Joe, is about, you know, how does American create jobs? It's that innovation. And I have to innovate like crazy and to really create value by this new product, new services. That's what all American is all about. And American is, you know, typically, in my opinion, you know, perform really, really excellent when it's under the pressure. I think, what is that pressure? I think most of this discussion we have is about, you know, wake up, right? It's a global world.
I think you're absolutely right. Exactly. We got into the war under pressure, and then that's when we started to kick butt.
Exactly.
When we got the gun to our head, nobody's better than us. And we got a gun to our head right now, but we're broke because China owns this country.
And I think we should keep in mind, you were talking about manufacturing jobs, and Michael was alluding to it earlier, there still are hundreds of millions of people in China who make Michael, you probably know the exact statistics, that they make very little money, according to U.S. standards. And one client was telling me this week, she recently got her MBA, and as part of that, she went to China as part of her global immersion process. She said she could never survive in China because she watched the manufacturing floor, and if people finished making a widget, they had to finish in 3 seconds. If they took 4 seconds, they would start getting docked in their pay, and they would eventually, they got it put in some basket, and once that basket was full, they would get fired. And she told me even if they did it under 3 seconds, I guess it would be less quality, so they also would get docked. So she said she would not survive. And she was just explaining how tough it is to work in China. But these people they feel privileged, and they're very happy to be able to have these jobs where they make not much money compared to what our standards. So I think the jobs that U.S. people no longer want to do, they're happy to do. And now U.S. people are maybe doing 21st century jobs.
There's a furniture manufacturer here in North Carolina, makes office furniture. And I asked him this question, why do you now manufacture in China? And he said, because there are 600 employees who show up at that factory every morning on time, never a concern. There will never be a call that says, I can't be there today because my kid's sick. I can't be there today because I've got to do this. I've got to take a day off. He said, over here, the problem I've got is having people who show up every day at work, who'll stay with me long term, who want that job that much. And, by the way, he still manufactures in China, tremendously less expensive than he could here in the United States. But the problem really gets down to the attitude toward work. Those people are going to show up, Grace.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I hear that a lot. And you got to remember my background. Blue-collar union guy from Detroit. Okay, I'm not going to forget that. It's like being a Red Wing fan. I'm never going to stop being one. We hear that a lot, but I'll take an American worker, back him up against any foreign worker, one-to-one. When it's down on the line, we're going to do the job and get it done right. I hear that a lot, Larry, and I hear what you just said, Grace. And there's got to be a balance here someplace. And they're very happy to have a job to make a widget for 5 cents. Well, that culture where you're from is not the culture that we're from. And we're hurting here. And if Michael, you're right. We're right now, we're still way ahead. But every day they chip away at what we've got in this country. And I'm sorry to fly the American flag, and I'm not doing a very good job of flying it, but I'm going to still fight for us. 860-WPTF, 860-9783, toll-free 800-662-7979. Trying to get some balance. This is more of an education than me flying the American flag, okay, because I don't know everything. And I'm not like other talk show hosts. They know everything. I don't know everything, and I don't claim to know it. All I know is I have opinions about it, and I'm willing to learn more about it. Back with Michael, Grace, and Larry on News Radio 680 WPTF and WPTF.com.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, a couple comments. One is that I don't think we're ever going to pay our debt back, and this was something you were talking this morning, and I missed maybe an hour of your show, so I don't know if you're still...
Shame on you, Gerald. What the heck were you doing? I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
I just don't believe there's any way, you know, the clock, the meter's not stopped running. No one's serious about paying this debt back. And if you figure the numbers, it works out to be about $500,000 a second we'd have to pay back for the next year. And I don't know if that's a trillion or 14 trillion. I figured it out the other night on my iPad, but it's just an insurmountable amount of money just to pay down the debt. That's not keeping up with the regular budget. No one's serious about paying off this debt. And the Bible says that the borrower is servant to the lender. We are the servant of China.
And let's get their take on it, because Michael Chen, you're a businessman. You're an American. You're Chinese descent, raised there. You're involved in relations with U.S. and China with money. What do you think? Hold on, we got his mic back on there. Hold on. Go ahead, Michael, see if you're on there. Yeah, you're on.
Yeah, I think it's not necessarily a bad thing to have some debt. The key is how do you balance that debt and how do you manage that leverage, right? If I can have somebody's money and manage that more effectively and make more money out of it, I'm actually better off to borrow the money and generate value out of this. But I think it's true. I think if you look at this country, I think yesterday's Business Week actually has an article and say, if you look at the United States as a company, and would you invest into a company that's losing, you know, 40-some trillion or 40-some billion dollars a year? And on average, I think each American now owes $140,000.
Mm-hmm.
This is a tough issue.
What do you sense, and Gerald, hold on a second, I'll get you a follow-up if you need one. What do you sense from the business community in China that you deal with and know, and Grace, you would know more also about this, about the investing into the U.S.? How do they? What's their sense on that? Good investment? Go ahead, either one of them.
It is. You start to see very strong interest of Chinese wanting to come to the United States. I think there's still a lot of barriers today for the Chinese to come into the United States.
Government barriers as far as immigration laws are concerned?
Immigration laws, you know, regulatories, anything. Once you start to look into that area, a lot of hurdles for the Chinese money to come into the
States.
Well,
it's anybody's money, though, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
We can't allow you to be... we have a law in this country as far as the media is concerned that no foreigner can own, you know, only a very small percent. We don't want any foreign countries controlling the media. So, I mean, you can invest into it to a certain point, but we can't, this can't be owned by a Chinese company. And, you know, I'm in here talking Chinese. I mean,
yeah,
not,
but
not
no
a,
matter
not
if
a knock. I mean, I'm just saying.
No matter if it's a Chinese or Japanese, at the end of the day, I think as a country, the United States has to figure out a way to generate more than what we spend, right? And for the normal consumers, I think the good thing about this recession is actually a reset, and everybody has to, you know, take a notch back and start to think about how I'm going to manage better on my balance sheet. Right. I think that's actually a good thing.
Grace, what about your company?
Yeah, and China actually has money that they want to invest in America. Recently, Michael and I were both part of a hosting of a delegation from China right before they went to the state dinner at the White House, and they were here to do an official signing of the money that was being put in the Hamner Institute here in Research Triangle Park, a very substantial amount of money. A lot of zeros were in that amount. So I think that it behooves us to build those relationships with different provinces in China that want to put big dollars here in the U.S. for mutually beneficial reasons.
Okay, Gerald, do you have a backup question?
Well, just a thought that, you know, it's time to learn Chinese. I love this country, and I'm a patriot. I've served in the military, so don't get me wrong. But we are the teenager, and China's the credit card issuer, and they are giving us more and more and more credit. But there's going to be a cost. There's going to be a day of reckoning, and whether it's, you know, China coming to us and saying, "Hey, give us Hawaii as a down payment on what you owe us."
I think that's the challenge for everybody.
I think there are already more Chinese and Japanese in Hawaii than there are.
But I'm telling you, you cannot go on like this. And Wisconsin is just the tip of the iceberg.
Absolutely.
You cannot go on.
That's an interesting point, Gerald. You're right.
More and more and more and more and more. And, you know, and they get on us when they think we're reckless and spending recklessly, running up our credit cards. Well, that's what this government's been doing for years.
Thank you, Gerald. Appreciate it, man. Nice call. Good conversation. Chip Greensboro, you're on News Radio 680 WPTF. Welcome to the conversation.
Thank you, Mr. Cho. It's really a blessing to travel through your area and listen to your program occasionally, especially today. I think you have some very well-informed guests on there. But may I make a comment? I've heard the comment two or three times in the past 2 minutes about China owns the U.S. Well, I think that's a little bit overkill. My understanding, I'm a private investor. I deal with 47 different countries. China only owns about $1 trillion of our treasury notes.
25%.
China owns 25%, according to Mr. Chen there, Chip.
Well, that goes up and down. At one particular time last year, about July of the year 2010, the Japanese owned more of our debt than China did, because China sells that stuff every few months to create some new figures. So, you know, the thing about China owning us is about $15 or so trillion of treasury bills out. And my is from the Treasury Department, and my senator says that, you know, China only has roughly $1 trillion. But yeah, but let me give you another thing. IBM some years ago had a personal PC computer division in Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, probably 7 to 8 miles from where you're sitting right now.
Yep.
They could not make it profitable. The Chinese came in and purchased that PC.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah,
that's a company called Lenovo right now. It's the fourth biggest PC manufacturer.
Yeah, a lot
in the
of
world.
My friends lost their jobs at IBM when that happened, Chip. But keep going.
Well, but my point is this: they purchased that thing. They used the majority of the IBM employees that was making those units came in with Chinese management. They leased the building from IBM to begin with, and in the second quarter. Within 6 months, they were making a profit. Now, today, they've moved up to their own headquarters in Marsville. Companies called Lenovo. Go in most any bank or, you know, credit union, and you'll see all the computers up and down the aisle is Lenovo. They improved it, you know. And this is an example of what's occurring in America.
Well, what happened? You guys seem to know, but how come IBM could get the darn thing going?
Well, let me tell you a story that this is what I heard from the inside people, right? So when Lenovo took over, so this guy walk in and look at the all the spendings. They say, how come our IT spending is so expensive? So he did one thing. He literally just looked at what he spent and what he was supposed to spend on. He matched those two lists. Guess how much money he saved? At least $4 million just by check your list and check your bill, right? So when the organization gets bigger and bigger, when the country gets richer and richer, and there are a lot of waste built into the organization, any organization, right? When you get big, it becomes very, very, you know, slow, inefficient. And to some extent, I think it's a good thing. And if somebody take over and start to drive the efficiency out.
Well, Lenovo also has a lot of operations in China, of course.
Right.
And so
right.
One of the questions I would have is how much shifting of various aspects of the operation have they done?
Right. Lenovo is a very respected company in China. And when I've taught in China, I actually made that my final exam and had one of the country managers in China, Lenovo, come and be our guest. So I think it was change of ownership and looking at things differently. And it wasn't a key priority for IBM. So
you mean the company wasn't, the division was not a key priority.
Right. And whereas Lenovo is a, they were focused on this. So they were buying the asset and then figuring out how to squeeze out of
it. The PC market was never a major
right.
profit
you know
center
what?
For
and this
IBM.
Now, see, this makes total sense to me the way you put this now. Because I'm thinking we got a bunch of dummies at IBM.
No,
but
no,
the
priority.
Point was, yes, because you can go in and I consult radio stations. And there's, let's say a guy has 5 radio stations in a market. And he's, you know, the two that are doing really well, he ignores the bottom two until somebody comes in and says, this is what you can do to fix it, because they're not focused on it. So that's probably what you guys are seeing. See, now this makes total sense to me. Terrence at Chapel Hill, you're on News Radio 680 WPTF. Darn, this show's an education. Go ahead, Terrence.
What's going on today?
Terrence, go ahead. You asking us a question?
Yes, I do. I've got a comment first for your guest and then for you. It sounds like he knows what he's talking about, so I'm sure he'll agree with me that green technology is one of the ways we can probably be exporting major amounts of goods to China. To follow up on that for you now, that's what this president's been talking about the whole time, and you know what? He's not getting much help from the other side. One third thing, conservatives talk a big game about lowering the deficit. But I don't hear too many people saying, let's get rid of Social Security. You might as an individual, but your party sure isn't. So I think that's a misrepresentation and a double standard.
I remember you, Terrence. You've called before. Let's start with the first question, okay, that you said.
Sure.
He's talking about green technology. Grace, jump in.
Yeah, actually, when we said earlier we were commenting on manufacturing in China, their prowess in that, actually in the last many years, China has gone well beyond that. And been seen as a leader and an innovator, including clean technology. And actually, there's large companies here in the U.S. that are looking to China to help joint venture and learn more about clean technology. So I think it's a two-way street that we can learn from China and China can learn from us. So I think given that that's a priority globally in clean technology, I think we can partner together successfully with China.
I think they can learn maybe from the battery. That's in the Volt. You heard about that?
Yeah, the Chevy Volt, of course. So look at Michael. Michael's got a comment here, Terrence. Hold on, we're not getting
I think the term earlier mentioned about, you know, the other side of the government is not giving a lot of help to do this. I think at the end of the day, as a business people, this is our challenge. And go answer the call for the country, for this whole nation. How do you get into the market? That's nowhere near what you used to, right? Business environment, legal environment, regulatory, how people interact, and how things gets done, right? There's a lot of the challenges. I think if you want to go out and say, here's what I made, you know, here's my price, go sell it in the market. Yeah, you probably can sell some, but I guarantee you won't be successful. Yeah. The only way, if you look at one case, go out of GE, you know, used to sell this very bulky $500,000 CT machines in China. Mm-hmm. What really got them a hit is actually this $5,000 mobile units. So the people can take out to the villages, take out to these farmers, and treat the patient on the spot. And that really, you know, took off and created a new category and generate a lot of revenues. I think for the business people, find out a way. That's part of the innovation. Don't get me wrong. It's not only just technology, but also it's the business model innovation that we have to choose from.
Well, I think you've got a president that's going to reward that type of behavior. He's kind of helped out small business owners and done some things I think that previous presidents have not done for whatever reason. I'm not sure. Another double standard.
All right, Terrence, appreciate your phone call. All right, join the conversation, 860-WPTF. We can go off on that Barack Obama bit in a minute here, Larry. I know you're chomping at the bit.
I don't think that's the issue, though.
It isn't.
You want a break?
Yeah. Okay. It's News Radio 680, WPTF and WPTF.com.
This is a word problem. Mrs. Borensky just assigned another huge project in third period English. How did Shakespeare's own love life influence the romantic scenes in Romeo and Juliet? Logan and Tanya are in that class. Logan is 2 inches taller than Tanya. After school, he goes home and gets on the internet. Tanya heads to the library and asks her librarian for help. So who gets the work done first? And who gets the better grade? You have 5 seconds. Time's up, pencils down. The answer to both questions is Tanya. Caught on the web for hours, Logan got frustrated and shrunk 4 inches. Meanwhile, Tanya got expert help from her librarian, who pointed her to the perfect website and perfect books, too. Tanya was done in no time. Logan was just done for. Remember, there's a place to get quick expert help with homework, because every library comes with a librarian. Got to know something fast? Make your life easier. Your library's the very best place to start.
Talk to your favorite NASCAR driver every Tuesday night on NASCAR Live with your host, Eli Gould.
You're on NASCAR Live with our guest, Jimmy Johnson. Hi.
Good evening, Jimmy.
Good evening, sir.
What a pleasure to talk to you.
Call in at 1-800-2-NASCAR or email your questions anytime at NASCARLive@mrnradio.com. NASCAR Live, Tuesday nights at 7 Eastern on MRN Radio.
On the Triangle's new home for NASCAR, News Radio 680 WPTF and WPTF.com.
Here's a tip to lower your energy bills. Change a light. Just change one old-fashioned light bulb at home to one with the Energy Star label. Your new light will use 75% less energy, save money, and last for years. For more information, contact the North Carolina State Energy Office or go online to energystar.gov and take the Change a Light pledge to join others, changing the world, one light at a time.
This is Brian Freeman. Join me weekday mornings at 5 for North Carolina's Morning News. Now it's Joe Wade Formicola on News Radio 680 WPTF and WPTF.com.
News Radio 680 WPTF and WPTF.com. Grace, Michael, and Larry, they're going to stick around at least about a little after 3 o'clock because we've got so many more things to talk about. It's been a very interesting conversation. We've gone from the Tiger Mom issue now to relations, business relations, and just plain relations with China. And let's see, Larry, you want to respond to Terrence and the Barack Obama?
Well, I don't want to make it a political discussion.
You can make it political.
And I won't go there. No, I won't go. But
you can make it political.
I think it's important that we understand something about green technology. That is great stuff. I mean, but that's not the savior. You know, what's going to happen as this technology is developed, whether it's batteries or whether it's photovoltaic, solar cells, whatever it happens to be, that technology is going to be manufactured and produced in the place where it is least expensive to do it. A lot of that's going overseas somewhere. So
yeah, but I'm not convinced it's Chevy, and I know Bob Lutz, president of General Motors, they're doing all this. Excuse me, they're doing all this stuff because I think they should be doing it. The question is, they're going to sell any
of
these
cars.
Well,
I don't think they're selling a lot of those $40,000 cars.
They're not selling a lot of hybrids either. I'm still at the stop play with a big F-150 dually next to me. You know.
But the point is, a lot of the technology that's being created is also being created overseas. You know, we'll buy a lot of that wind generation from places like France and Germany. And we may buy some of that algae that's being worked on to provide power from places like China, for example. Grace, mm-hmm. You were talking about that.
All right, Grace, you had a couple other comments. Go ahead, jump in.
Yeah, one thing that I encourage my son, my almost 14-year-old son, is just to be aware of the global competitiveness, what he and his classmates need to do in order to be successful in the long term. And having taught both here in America, graduate MBA students, and in China, there's a very big difference in the work ethic and the attitude. When I taught here, I was really amazed at how students are different from when we were growing up. It is a generational thing, and then it's also a difference in America and other countries. So here, I was interested in learning how students wanted less work, how they thought there was they didn't want to be challenged as much. And then I learned all about the entitlement generation and how when Susie and Johnny get trophies just for participating, that's this phenomena that's happening. So I looked at myself and thought, ooh, I need to change my parenting skills. And then when I taught in China, my students who are with me often 10 hours a day with homework at night, and they're asking for more. And they were respectful. They were so respectful. And I remember the last day and the last time I taught in an international MBA program, they wanted to stay longer because they wanted to thank me. And they were eulogizing me. And I was pinching myself. I'm still alive because they were telling me, you've changed our way of thinking. You've added so much value to our lives. And so it's just so different. So I go home to my son. I say, are you respecting your teachers? And I tell him about the students in China. And I'm trying to get him to learn and practice his Chinese with me, and just how much harder they work. And granted, that's changing. We talked on a break earlier about now with the one-child household and the little emperor. That's all changing, and sadly, probably X years from now.
Now, you're a single mom now raising this child.
Right,
I mean,
right.
You know,
yep.
So it's a different world for you, too, in the family makeup.
Yeah, so I just think it's important for young people here in the United States to be aware of their competition they face globally.
Well, look, I think, for all the people who are listening, all the kids, whatever, still keep in mind that there are a lot of things that you can learn. You can spend time. You can really work hard to get better. But there are things that's just, you know, doesn't correlate with the times. You know, just think about a great artist. And this is the conversation I have with my daughter and with my wife most of the time. Sometimes I said, just don't play. I mean, no matter how long you play, you're not going to get there, right? It's the sense of the music. I mean, in the business world, that's what we said, the creativity. It's the innovation. And coming back to the green energy topic, it's more than just green energy. It's anything that we do, how can you do that better than your competitors? Mm-hmm. I think, you know, all the business people, all the, you know, blue collar, white collar, gray collar, whatever, answer that question. How can I get better? How can I outpace everybody that's out there?
Joe, another comment on education that we haven't covered before, and that's simply this. The reason that a lot of countries, and many of them are, ahead of us in math and science is because most of the people that are teaching those subjects in those countries are subject matter experts. What we do different in this country is we send our kids to school to become educators. They get a degree in education, and then they may find themselves teaching science or social studies or whatever it happens to be. They aren't necessarily subject matter experts.
Well, I know my daughter is a – her degree – her teaching is language arts and social studies. She's
right.
Not qualified to teach math or science, I mean, at her level. So I guess they're fine-tuning these degrees now a little bit. What we don't do enough of in college to the next step is, I think, that I took classes in broadcasting from an individual and never spent 1 minute in a radio station or a television station. And that's changing because now we want the real person that actually was the plumber, was the broadcaster, was the whatever, to say this is what it's really like. Because we never knew what it was really like. because this guy had a degree in mass communications, but he never mass communicated anybody except for 40 students at Ferris State University. Right. So, I mean, it's just, I think we're learning that a little bit. I mean, and you don't need, you know, you don't have to have a college degree to go teach heating and air conditioning so you can get the degree. I mean, are you okay with that?
Well, that's why when I teach, I call myself a practical. I don't have a PhD. And there are
shame on
there
you,
are
Grace.
Professors.
You're a disgrace to your family, Grace. You're a disgrace.
There are professors, for instance, at UNC at Keenan Flagler that are professors of the practice who have gone and they teach, for instance, corporate governance or marketing because they've been a successful entrepreneur marketer or a successful investment banker. And I think that's an additive dimension of, for instance, some of the programs at UNC.
But it's you got an MBA. You got an MBA from Harvard, dear. Come on. What was better, MIT or Harvard?
They're very different experiences.
Were they really?
Very much so.
Okay, better or worse? I mean, MIT is, you know.
Well, MIT is actually where I realized that it was cool to be an Asian brainiac, because when I was growing up, I was a banana and didn't want to be Chinese.
Oh,
and then
I
when I went to MIT, it's acronym we call it Made in Taiwan, because there's such a huge It's actually harder to get into MIT if you are Asian, because they have to have diversity. They can't have all Asians.
Really? Actually, I didn't know that. And then you went to Harvard and woke up, huh? Is that what happened?
Yeah, there weren't that many Asians at Harvard Business School.
Michael Chen, one quick question. We're going to wrap it up. You come over here and you pick NC State.
Yeah.
Because of computers?
No, because of my wife. She came here first. She picked that one. That's a smart choice.
You're a wolf pack. Okay. Listen, guys, we can wrap it up. I appreciate it, Larry. Grace, Michael, thank you very much. It's been a very interesting
hour. Thank you for having me.
No, we're going to have you back. We'll get you back. We'll figure out what's going on.
All right.
News Radio, 680 WPTF.